Thank you ever so much for coming this morning. I know it's early for a Wednesday, but welcome to MIPIM UK and welcome to this session, the Afraid to Ask session, kindly supported by Lendlease and by CLS Risk Solutions. My name is Samantha McClary. I'm the Deputy Editor of Estates Gazette and Head of Content and co-founder of Rewire, which is our women's tribe, I like to call it now, for across the real estate industry, across the built environment, in fact, where we gather women together to talk about the issues there are in the industry and also what we can do about it. I am very happy to see so many men in the room today. Thank you for coming. And we've all segregated ourselves, so that's good. Anyway, I have been wanting to do a session like this for a long time because I think diversity, not just around gender, is such a big issue, particularly in our industry. And while I do think that we are trying really hard to get it right and make the workplace a more even playing field, I'm not convinced that we're doing it well enough, or even actually in the right way. I think this is because we're often afraid to ask the difficult questions, or perhaps even just the wrong questions, as to be really and truly diverse. We need to be really honest and open. So I hope that's what we can do today. I have wandered around and told you all about a wonderful system we use called Slido. Should you wish to use that, please log in using the hashtag Rewire, or I also like this system. Hand in the air, will work too. But before we get on to the session, let me introduce our wonderful panel. Starting closest to me is Lucy Homer, who is Head of Design for Lendlease's construction business. She has a very wide remit across the UK with projects ranging in value from 20 million, measly 20 million, all the way up to 1.6 billion. Lucy, thanks for joining us. Next up is Andrea Carpenter, who is the Director of Women Talk Real Estate. So she is on a mission to get more women on panels. Well done. and she's also a writer, a communications consultant, and a former colleague. So thanks, Andrea, for joining us. Next to Andrea is Jackie Newstead. Jackie is partner at Hogan Lovells. She has been working in property law for 30 years and has been recently won the award for Best Woman Solicitor Managing a Large Practice. So Jackie, thank you ever so much for joining us. Next to Jackie is Sam Harden, who's Head of Strategy at CLS Risk Solutions. She's responsible for the development of new business ventures at CLS. And then last but not least, at the end there is Sue Brown, my co-founder of Rewire. Sue is the Executive Director of Planning and Development at London Fur. She has a long career in property communications. She also knows pretty much everyone in real estate. So thank you, ladies, for joining us this morning. So, as I say, I will take questions. Sorry, I need to do that. I will take questions from you whenever anyone has a burning question. But I will kick us off with the first, which is diversity a buzzword or a PR stunt, or is it something real? Lucy, do you want to kick us off?
I like that you looked at me first. From my perspective and from Lendlease's perspective, we don't think it is just a buzzword. It's been at the very core of what we've been doing over the last couple of years. And we put a lot of effort into making sure our project teams, and so I'm talking about project teams, I'm talking about something, you know, as big as Elephant and Castle, or sort of, which is sort of, you know, sort of the large regeneration in Southwark, through to a sort of a £10-20 million construction project. We will look at how those teams are set up. One of the project director's roles is to make sure that they've got diversity from not only male and female gender, but also across age, across background. And what we're finding, and we've sort of seen, and I think you can see sort of with some of the wins that we've had over the past sort of 12 months, what a major difference that has made to our business in terms of making sure that we're thinking differently to the competition, and we're thinking outside the box, and we're getting different solutions. And we believe that that's sort of is down to the diversity of the teams that we set up from the start.
Sue, you're the queen of PR.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, having spent 30 years doing real estate comms, is it a PR thing? Is that such a bad thing? But I won't say that. I've been in the industry for a long time, it's very good to see we've got an all-female panel here. I mean, obviously, historically, it's not been the case in the industry. Are we any better, any worse than the finance industry? But clearly, we've had issues over the years of just not enough senior women. And certainly, the 30 years I've spent in the industry, it's very much just about promoting women and about just getting women up the ladder. That's what I've been doing. I don't think it's a stunt. I think there are now people in the industry who take it very seriously. People like Chris Grigg at British Land take it very seriously. But we're still short, aren't we, in terms of, I mean, people like Jackie Hogan Lovell's done brilliantly, and Hogan Lovell's, I think, are genuinely really, really good at it. But we still lack senior women in positions of power within the industry as a whole, I think.
Jackie, do you think we're taking equality too far? I read, when I was researching this, there was some research from the Higher Education Policy Institute that found that a boy born in 2006, if we carry on the way we are, will be 75% less likely than his sister to go to university. Are we pushing the women thing too hard?
I think the problem is that in order to rebalance everything, there's had to be a real focus on getting women to have the ambition and the confidence to think that they can succeed. So I'm interested by that quote, because I do worry sometimes that we are pushing too far, and that actually what we should be looking at is a level playing field for everyone. And it's not just, you know, male, female, it's the much wider diversity and inclusion agenda. So I do get a little bit upset when, you know, diversity just becomes male, female, because actually I think it's much more about the wider community, it's about the LGBT community, it's about social inclusion, about sort of racial inclusion. Because you look at our industry, and yes, there's an issue between men and women, but there's also an issue with more inclusion of the gay community, and there's certainly a social inclusion issue. You know, most people, certainly in the law, and from what I see of the industry more generally, you know, by and large are middle class. So there's a lot more that needs to be done. But yeah, I think it will come round.
But isn't there a statistic that's going to take about 70 years at the current rate for it to be equal for men and women in business? That actually that kind of, you know, totally agree that, you know, the diversity conversation is so broad and it needs to be. Social inclusion is hugely important for our industry, but we're at the point where we actually get 50-50 women coming in as graduates, but we lose them. And, you know, there's no ability for them to, you know, there's no role models, there's hardly any role models, you know, and there's so many stereotypes about kind of what women do in this industry. I mean, you talked about panels. We did, you know, what our aim is to get more women on panels. This is, you know, this is the only time you allow more than one woman on a panel in general. I mean, we looked at we looked at 81 events in 2016, and of the panels that were on those events, 50% had no women on it. And that visibility is hugely important to try and actually show the industry, you know, that we do a huge range of expertise, and, you know, and that we need more role models so women come in the industry don't think, okay, well, I get so far and then I'm not allowed any further. So that proactivity is so important.
Why can't a male be a role model for a woman?
totally can, but we've got lots of them on stage already, so I'd like some more female role models. Yeah.
And whose fault is it that there aren't women on panels? Is it our fault?
I think it's, sorry, just to pick up on your point there, I think that's an important point. It's the stereotyping, and it's the image that we allow ourselves to adopt. So, I mean, I've only been in the industry 4 years, and in the insurance industry, which is not known for being the most diverse, you know, market in the world. But I think that's an assumption that I could have taken and decided and ruled out that that wasn't going to be for me because it was a male world and I wasn't going to fit in. So I think when you have enough people telling you, like these situations, go for it, and you just stand up, then that starts to redress, I think, diversity rather than we must meet this stat to balance it out. If you know, if women or, you know, ethnic backgrounds are thinking, well, actually, I can do this, and they believe it, it will make very obvious the problems, if there are problems, you know, with diversity. It draws them out. So if you've got the beliefs, I think, within yourself, I mean, you were just saying there about backgrounds, I'm everything that doesn't fit the stereotype, you know, not from a middle-class background, no one in my family having been to, you know, higher education, let alone university, you know, was never going to make it in London because I was Scottish, you know, all these different things. You guys are all like, don't even know what you're saying. You know, I get that on a day-to-day basis, but it's just the kind of, if you allow these assumptions and these things you're reading, these stats, you can put pressure on yourself and think, well, you know, if it's so unequal, then why even bother? But if you think, well, actually, I'm just going to go for it, then maybe we redress the balance ourselves, obviously, with the industry support.
But we are a minority in this industry as women, so our voice has to be louder. You know, I think one of the things I realised when starting up Women Talk Real Estate is that, you know, it's not just about putting kind of faces on the stage. Actually, it's a cultural shift for women to train them to be more confident to talk about what they do and, you know, not just say, oh, actually, I can't attend a conference today because I've got work to do. You know, not understanding that attending a conference, building business contacts and networks, being seen is a huge part of work.
Yeah. So I think it's all about confidence. Mm. So I'm pretty confident, as some people over there know. But the majority of the women that I deal with in our business aren't. So equipping them, exactly as you've just said, to be able to go out and do this, that takes time. To do that. So I have a sort of rule that I say yes to, sort of, if I'm asked to do anything, I say I'll do it once, and if it was worth my time, then I'll do it again. But I reckon probably 90% of the women in our business would not do that, and that's what we need to change, is confidence.
Can I ask a question of the chaps in the room? Do you struggle with confidence? Is it a purely female problem? Yes, no one's put their hand up.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, nothing what we say about confidence and building networks doesn't apply to men. It's just that we feel that we can use that to actually improve our representation. It's a real catalyst for change for us.
I think one of the other issues with getting balanced panels is that, as you know, one or two people have said, there aren't enough senior women in the industry. So if you've got, say, 10% of the industry is female, and you're looking for a panel, naturally there are going to be more men who fit what you need. So you've got to work harder to find the women.
Yeah, and that's where we try to plug the gap. We're a database of women who want to speak at events, and we got 267 women sign up within a month. So you're telling me there aren't enough women out there. Event organisers have to look harder. Well, they don't know. They have to come to us. We're looking harder for them. It's free. We, you know, event organisers can access it, and we've placed 4 speakers here at this event, you know, so it's working as well. We've had 50 inquiries through the database in a number of weeks.
So can I ask the quota question? Should we have them? Should we, and not just for women, should we make sure that we have a quota on race, a quota on religion, a quota on sexual orientation, I was going to Sue earlier, whether people like Marmite or not. I hate Marmite. You know, do we need...
So do I.
I don't mind it.
If we want to be truly balanced, do we have to be that descriptive about it, prescriptive?
Yeah, my view is that we do. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not always a popular view, but I think I'm all in favour of quotas right across the board because I think it's the only way you really affect change. And, I mean, I've been banging the gender drum ever since I started work, because when I first went to work, because I'm exceptionally old, I was the I never learnt to type, because if I'd learnt to type, that was, as far as I was concerned, that was going to just put me in a position forever, and it's why I'm such an awful typist now. But when I very first went to work, literally, I was the only... When I first went to work, I worked at London Borough of Wandsworth. I was a grad trainee, and I was the only woman there who wasn't a secretary, telephonist or a typist. But as I say, I'm very old, so I do believe in quotas. I think it's the only change you can make. It's the only way you affect change. And, I mean, now, I mean, we've got an all-women panel here. I mean, you know, some of us have reached fairly senior levels. But I do think we have to do it, particularly in relation to ethnicity. Certainly when I was working in a large consultancy, it was of real concern that we just had mainly white faces. And I'm sure that's true at Hogan Lovells and lots of the other professional firms as well.
So here's the afraid to ask question. You have a white man, and let's say a black lady, they're both just about there in terms of they equally could do the job. Maybe he is a little bit, might be a little bit better, but because of a quota, we push him aside. Should we be allowed to do that?
Yeah, see, because I don't believe in quotas.
I don't.
Because I think you have to be really careful with quotas, because otherwise the person who has got the job is then open to criticism that you've only got the job because you happen to be female or black or whatever.
Hi, I'm Leanne Trippin from England. I feel very strongly about this issue, and I agree with Sue for two reasons. First of all, we already have an unspoken quota system, which is 95% white males on boards. If you look at any website, there'll be one woman and maybe one ethnic person. So there's already a quota system, because essentially boards are saying it's fine to have 90-95% of one type. And the idea of, you know, someone being on board or being in a position because they're not not good enough or just a bit shy, I've met a lot of people in my life, men, who are not good enough.
So the way that we've tackled that, so we've made some hard decisions around our quotas. So to have 50-50 shortlists, for instance, so that we have half men, half women on the shortlists, and then going through a very fair, open, transparent process with assessment centres, with balanced panels, so that you're not just being interviewed by either all women or all men. So that the decision that comes out is actually the right decision for the business. So there are ways to do that rather than just going, I'm choosing this person just for a quota.
Yeah, I was absolutely against quotas a year ago, and I've had an absolute conversion. Yeah. If my co-director saw me, that she'd fall off her chair now, because she was always very pro. But I think it's about it, because it comes about the process, not just the position. It becomes about looking harder for women. And when you look harder for women because you have a quota, you find there are plenty of excellent women, and you actually find a brilliant candidate. That's the thing. No, it's not just about, oh, we have to fill that slot. It makes you, it's like recruitment. Yep. You know, if a recruitment agent comes to you for a senior position with 10 men on it, tell him and her to go away and find some women to put on that list, because it's just about looking harder to find the experts are absolutely out
there. I think that's the key difference you've got to. It's the process that I think the quotas should be targeted at, because regardless of what should be right and what's not, that people will find another excuse to say, you know, you're only in that job because they had to fill a number. But if they get the process right, and it starts from the ground up, where you're saying, as you say, bring in 10 and 10, you will see skills that are not there because they have to fill a number, but because the skills are there, and it will be the best person for the job. And I think that truly then addresses
the
rest of it. Wait for
Well, see, I much prefer to go for targets rather than quotas, and I completely agree with the others about having a balanced process. But I think if you get quotas, you're almost pigeonholing people too much. So I would much rather have a target of a balanced board, for example, to use yours. And a balanced board isn't 95% men. Yeah. But a balanced board will include all sorts of people from different backgrounds and, you know, all the other sort of things that we've talked about as being part of the inclusion. So I think just having a quota for women doesn't really hit the wider issue, which is about a much more inclusive and broader spread of representation of society within our industries.
The first job I went for when I came to London, I'll leave the company undisclosed, but the guy says, well, you know, if you've got any experience, I says, no, I've just finished my master's, and he says, well, you know, Scottish female, I suppose we could take equal ops. I didn't want that job. I didn't want to go in because I was equal ops. I wanted to go in because they were excited about hiring me, so obviously I don't work there. And that's the fear, I think, with the quota thing. That's why I think the process has got to be right, because it's like, well, they've got what we need, and, you know, because I think that will become its own issue, given time, because you'll have this whole new redress that these are the people that were good and these are the quota people, and you'll just have this whole new issue of diversity trying to bring those groups together.
So Leanne mentioned that there was plenty of men on boards who weren't good enough. Are there plenty of women who have got jobs for other reasons that aren't good enough for their job too?
Statistically, probably. Yeah. Yeah, but I think they have to work a lot harder to get onto a board, so less likely.
So I'll open out if anyone else has some questions, I will continue on. Again, do not be afraid to ask. Gentleman at the back.
Just in terms of the, you were raising kind of a hypothetical question of two kind of those roughly equal, one male, one female, or groups. In a scenario where I think all the panel agree that it's nice to have a good mix of different people in the workplace on the board, then it's not quite as correlation. Actually saying one thing is better for the firm because of that background to just get a bit of workplace. So other career coaches that want to create someone and I've got a male candidate, a female candidate, and they're both equally good. And we haven't got many people in the workplace. But I said, well, that's not better for us because we're all in our, at least in our workforce. So it's not a negative situation, it's not an issue. It's saying actually this person is going to be good for us.
Which plays into it's not a PR stunt, it's profitable for the business to have them.
Comes back to that diversity of team thing that I mentioned right at the start, and we genuinely see it as a differentiator for us. So if I talk about our recent Google win, which is a construction bid, so typically I would be the only woman on sort of when we go to an interview. We had 3 women out of 10, so we had 30%. And that ranged from one of our really young graduates at sort of 22 up to sort of someone in sort of in later of their career. And sort of that it just made us sort of completely different, and we know that everyone else took all men to all their interviews.
Lady at the front.
Actually, I think that's a really good question, because it's one that we've been grappling with as well. So, yeah, again, you know, as lawyers, we've got a lot of graduates coming into the business, but the drop-off rate is much, much higher. And one of the sort of things that we've been getting feedback on is that the people coming through now don't necessarily regard some of the senior women in the business as the right role models. So, for example, when I had my daughter, I employed a full-time nanny and I came back to work full-time. Now, a lot of people don't want to do that or can't necessarily afford to do that. So finding the right role models who take a different approach is very important. A lot of it also depends on what your partner does and how supportive your partner is of what you want to do. So in order to tackle those sort of things, we've been trying to do sort of talks from other female role models within the firm to give women a sort of an idea of the sort of backgrounds that some of us come from. So it's not necessarily just the supposedly privileged approach. It's how we fought to get where we are. And some of those role models put people off, and some of them actually encourage them.
We also have to remove the stigma around flexible working and part-time working, that being a female thing. That doesn't have to be a female thing. You know, I worked in the Netherlands for quite a while where a huge number of men do four-day weeks just because, you know, their wife does as well. They share the childkeeping. That's 2 days when they're at home with their children. So it's, you know, it's that whole thing about, you know, wanting, we want equality. We don't want better, be better rights.
So
we
want
men and women
exactly
to have
that.
The part-time working, flexible working as
so
well.
So we offer shared parental leave, whether you're male or female. And you said so we believe that, you know, this is not much us giving back, so that the wives who don't work for us, actually their husbands or partners can share the workload in terms of childcare too. And I think that's massively important.
Mm. And that's why I also think it's important that there are male role models. Mm. So again, this is where I sort of get into this. It's not just about men and women, it's about role models generally. You know, people from all sorts of backgrounds saying that this is how I made it. You know, maybe that'll give you some ideas or some inspiration and stuff for how to get there.
So some interesting questions coming through from Slido as well. Number one is, those at the executive level see the need for diversity, but is this communicated and implemented at a management level? And I think even further down through the ranks.
I think companies are struggling with it, actually. I mean, we go in, my partner and I, we go in and talk to senior people about this, and we say, oh, you've got a fantastic female on your board, and they go, yeah, but don't tell anyone, the middle ranks is terrible. You know, so internally, they're all struggling with it, and I think it's also being fixated about that seniority. Actually, there's a lot, we've got to find all those good women at that layer below and start treating them as our senior layer in terms of our visibility and what we're doing and in terms of role models for their graduates and their younger people coming through. Yeah, I mean, often, you know, people come and say, we need a female CEO to sit next to 3 or 4 male CEOs. It's like, do you know, it'd be fine if you had a senior director or a director, which, you know, we women definitely don't like to embarrass ourselves on stage. You know, we do, you know, we'll prepare, we're ready for it. So, you know, stop being so fixated on, you know, that thin layer at the top. Let's build below and make that greater in the future.
Lucy, how far down through your business?
So I think we were talking about this earlier. So I sort of have it's a recent example from literally last week where sort of a relatively senior woman in our regional business sort of sent me an email and just said, I'm really struggling with this 50-50 thing. And we've probably done less sort of communications in our regional business than we have in London. And she just said, you know, I feel like I want to do it, but at the same time, I really don't. And she's really struggling. I said, look, it took me 20 years to get on board. I had a light bulb moment, and sort of I've never looked back. Someone else said earlier that, you know, at the start of your career, you just want to get on. It doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman. I had a light bulb moment. I won a Lifetime Achievement Award, a women's sort of awards thing. I always used to do that, women's awards, because they're not proper if they're for women. And I went back to my table, and I was thinking it wasn't really a big deal because it was just a women's award. And there was a young engineer sort of on the table, Vanessa, and she said to me, I want that to be me in 20 years. Mm-hmm. And that just sort of, that blew me away, because I was like, I'd never considered myself sort of, A is particularly senior, you know, although I sit on a board and things like that, that is, you know, it's not who I am. But that one moment has sort of stayed with me, and that was 18 months ago. And I think you've got to, lead from the business. I think it's got to not be HR led. I think it's got to be sort of people who are going to be role models. And you know, exactly as you just said, you've then got to encourage other people to be role models. The bit that I need to work on is getting that message out sort of lower and lower down. And what we're trying to do is to do it sort of bottom down and top up. And running things like, you know, exactly like Rewire, which we do internally, which is, you know, it's a female networking group. It helps people be able to have the confidence to talk about the real issues rather than it just being, oh, we must have more people on the board level. And it's tough, and it really is tough, and I have to answer questions like that. But I think you can only do it honestly, and it's like, it did take me 20 years to sort of believe in it. And I think there are lots of other people of my age, of the generation below, who are also struggling with it.
And we've talked about the ideal of, in the recruitment process anyway, if we have equal 10 men, 10 women. Another question through from Simon is, how do we make sure that there's 10 men, 10 women? And I know, Andrew, you said, I'll make sure the recruitment consultants
Go away, come back when you've got more.
Yeah. Where do you find them?
Exact visibility matters, and this is kind of exactly at the core of what, you know, we're trying to do. We're saying, you know, how do you think recruitment agents find, you know, people to pick up? They see people talking, they see people in the press. We need to be there, out there much more, and be much more of a visible network of women. And we'll get the opportunities. Maybe they don't suit us, maybe they, you know, they will, but at least we're being asked. We need to make sure that we, you know, I think sometimes women think that working is kind of sitting at your desk and working as hard as possible and waiting for someone to, you know, to reward you. And we have to be much more proactive about going out there and standing up for ourselves and saying, well, you know, actually, I've spoken at events, I've promoted the business, I feel like my next opportunity should be this. You know, just to be more confident about it.
But it's just about raising consciousness, isn't it? I mean, just doing this here this morning and the stuff that we've done on Rewire and you're doing in EG, Sam, with constantly pushing the message. I mean, it is consciousness raising, isn't it? Just making people
use
aware.
Use the female networks. You know, women do shy away from the female networks. Like, you know, it's back to
women.
That. Women's, yeah, I'm going to a women's party tonight. You know, but, you know, that's just a network, like any other network. You know, like former colleague network, you know, former college friends network. It's just another network, but harness it, because you will find women there who will be very supportive of you and become your role models.
I think as well, what you've got to do with these things is when you talk about women's situations, you just look at this room, it's not all women in this room.
No.
So it shows that there's a real understanding, a real appreciation that guys want to get involved in this too, because as you said, it's about equality, not betterment. So when you say these women's events, it's promotion of women, but heavily supported by guys.
Yeah.
And I think the more guys get on the board with that, the more it's going to be easier to get the balance right, rather than we're doing this and you're not. Because again, I think that's the danger. You're sometimes segregating yourselves.
Yes.
You know, I want guys in the room. I want guys to see me as equal. Not this is a women's party, therefore, you know, I'm something different from my male colleagues or counterparts.
Do you think in a lot of those women's
groups,
you know, we talk a lot, I don't, but we do, talk a lot about, oh, well, all the networking events that there are in real estate particularly, really blokey, you know, it's riding your bike, that's okay, that's not blokey. It's rugby, it's, you know, it's beer heavy stuff,
golf.
And we're like, oh, we don't want to do that. But, you know, if the lovely gentlemen in the room have come along to this women's event, should we not go, oh, sod it, I'll go and watch the rugby and I'll get in with them as well so they see me. Should we get over that?
You know, I think there should be a place for all sorts of different things. So, yeah, one thing I'm sort of nervous about is, because we as women criticise the old boys sort of club, you know, we can't turn ourselves into an old girls club. You know, it's got to be about something different and about giving everybody the chance to get together in groups and do things that they enjoy. So if you've got a group who want to go and watch the rugby, fine. If you've got a group who want to go off to a spa, fine. Don't criticise each other. Just, you know, let groups who enjoy different things do different things together.
The insurance industry is particularly bad for, I don't know how many invites I've had to golf days, because calling yourself Sam dear sir, you're like, sorry to disappoint, and I don't golf either. But it is, it's golf, it's rugby, it's football. I don't actually see it's the problem with the events. It's a sport. Don't, no more sport, I don't care. Yeah. Anything that's not sport, I'll attend.
Yeah. But it's institutional in our industry that these are the things. And you're involved with the cycling events. You've done a great job of getting more women out to do cycling, and that's become a more mixed thing. So I think it's not like, okay, let's just let's cancel the boxes at the rugby and the football. You know, let's carry on that, but let's bring in a mix, and let's make those who are arranging events or those who own the box tickets in the company more mindful about, you know, who are your clients. You know, should we do something as well? Should we do something alongside this? So it's not no to everything, but it's just, like, mix it up a bit.
And there are lots of women who like sport as well.
And that kind of brings us to the question of stereotyping. There's a question on Slido and one for me as well, which is, how do we escape those stereotypes? So the Slido question is, a man could shout and argue a point and be perceived as passionate. A woman does the same and she's emotional and irrational. My question along a similar theme is, why am I, the royal eye, labelled a ball breaker if I achieve while my male colleagues are just efficient? So how do we get around that? I think it's an issue of language. Like, you never call a man bossy.
No, that's certainly true. Yeah, that's...
So I...
Only Jackie
is the man bossy.
Yeah. I feel like it's less like that. I feel a bit more now. I think it used to be, there's women, in different generations that I've met in my 20 years in property who were ball breakers, and they kind of had to be at that time to get on, and thank you to them, because they, they have opened up paths for us. But now I think there's more of a reflection that we need to think more about management style being a spectrum. Margaret Thatcher was a male kind of management, more male management style than she was female. So that's an easy example. But think about us on the spectrum. If you are a ball buster, go for it, but if you're a quiet person, don't go into a meeting and try and be that. Mm-hmm. Women need to be relaxed about who they are, what their accomplishments are, and manage in the style that suits them. So it's also about trying not to fit a perception, trying not to fit your job title. Job title's not you. So it's about finding your own management style and being confident with that, not pretending.
It's the original point we said at the beginning, it's confidence. I think once you know what you want to do, then you're not really open for criticism, because you're setting out with it with your own agenda.
Yeah.
And it's not trying to fit to the expectation. I'm sure I've been called loads of things.
Yeah.
They're all compliments.
Yeah. So I remember as a young journalist always like wearing this really suit, to try and look grown up and kind of, ready for business sort of thing. And then as I got older, I realised I knew more then. And I dressed differently. I dressed more relaxed and more like myself, rather than trying to make myself the person I thought I should be as a journalist. Yeah, terrible folks.
So I completely agree with everything that's been said, and it does come down to confidence. I think if I think about our business, and specifically our construction business, where you've got females out on site with subcontractors, actually at the real gritty end of construction. So this is not sort of people sat in the office, sort of a nice computer with beautiful offices. This is in a site office on construction. And I think that there's probably a bigger culture change that still needs to happen out on site. And I know that if I walk around one of our sites, that feels very different to walking on other people's sites. And we've done a lot of work to make sure our offices are welcoming to everybody. But there is still a big change to go. And that comes sort of, you can do everything sort of back in the office, but if you're still sort of, you still haven't got that number of people who are females who are actually out there physically doing the work on site in terms of our supply chain, you do actually have to behave in a slightly different way, which I think does tend to come more difficult to women. One of our projects, we were really proud to have 10% women actually out on site physically doing the work at Glasshouse Gardens. And I think that's an incredible statistic when most sites have only got 1% women, and they tend to be the person doing the security. Actually having female electricians out there doing the gritty end, I think, is incredible. But I think the people managing them, because most of those guys are men, and quite a lot of them don't speak English, you have to behave perhaps in a slightly different way, and that's the bit we're trying to change, which is really tough.
I mean, I think on a lot of this, though, you need to lead from the top. So if you see someone, or should I say hear someone, saying something that you think is inappropriate, whether it's a man or a woman, you know, you should say to them, think about that. Do you know what you just said? Do you know how that person will have perceived what you just said? And unless you challenge people when they say something that's inappropriate, they're just going to keep saying it because they may not even realise that what they've said has offended in some way.
And that comes down to confidence. So giving our... and at the moment, we are concentrating on females, but giving our females the confidence to speak out when that happens is a massive part of what we're doing at the moment. And also to support the other women who might be in a meeting or sort of, you know, and we're talking about potentially, you know, one or two women on a site of 100 people. I mean, you know, sort of it's... can be that, and it is very different to being in an office.
So we have a few minutes left. I've got a couple of last questions from me, but any more out there? Hello.
So in the last I set up a sort of I call it a female networking group. That's been restricted to construction only. So we have 160 women in our construction business. That's 19%. They're all out on site, so it's very difficult for them to have a community and a network amongst themselves and support each other. So that is a really relaxed, informal affair. We have sort of inspirational women from different industries and our industry come in and talk, just do a very sort of light sort of question and answer session, which then opens up a variety of debate. I think the thing that's been really good for me to be able to feed back to the business is that the perception is it's always childcare that people want to talk about, and flexible working. Actually, the biggest thing for them has been culture on site, and also their own confidence and their own career progression. And then one thing that we've sort of, so that's sort of done in quite an informal way. We've actually got one this evening where Katie Kelleher, for those of you who know her, who's a female crane driver on Crossrail, which I just think just does like the most awesome job ever. And she's really young, she's really fun, you know, she doesn't care about quotas or anything like that. She's just a great young woman. So she's coming in to speak, because we've had quite a lot of sort of what I would term a bit more corporate speakers. But what we've done off the back of that, and we've sort of listened to the, yes, we've got the flexible working policies and all of that, but what we're now doing is a sort of female specific development program, which is going to be about building confidence, about mentoring, and we'll take 30 people through that in the next year. But then the hope is that once those 30 people sort of have got more confidence, understand more of the issues, and they'll start filtering that down through. It takes time. But the thing that I'm a big believer in, you don't have to do everything formally. So if I can, you know, so I had women who were sort of like, I'm not going to come to that group because I don't believe in women's issues. That's fine, but they came to one. So there was one really key senior woman who I sort of, who's out on site, and she doesn't, you know, she's like, I really don't want to come. So I made sure, her passion is sort of pop music. So I got someone from the music world to come and speak, made her come and listen. And she's now got every female from her site is now going to come to the next one. She's now become an advocate because she saw that it wasn't scary and about feminism and all of those things. And actually it was just about being us.
Great. So last two questions from me, because we're running over just mildly. So first I want to talk about the gender pay gap and whether in this industry it's a useless tool, because I think from our last, this is for agents anyway, last survey, 88% of director partner roles are taken up by men, and 75% of admin roles are taken up by women. So of course there's going to be a gap. So should we even bother reporting on it? or how do we switch those those percentages?
You need to actually compare like for like at the same level. So what someone needs to do, I don't know who, needs to look at the stats for director level. Are the female directors being paid at the same level as the male directors? That's where you can only look to see whether there's a real pay gap. So for example, for us, so we have about 30% women at partner level in the real estate group, and I'm pretty confident in saying that they are treated equally and fairly when it comes to remuneration. Below that, in our group below that, we're probably 50-50. And again, we look at all the stats at different levels to make sure that we're treating people fairly across the board. So you've got to look at it in groups. You can't just look at the whole thing.
Lucy, you've just...
So we're an early adopter of gender pay gap. And the problems as we're going to report on our construction business because we're over 250 people. There we are above the national average, but it gives us some statistics to then be able to work on. And I think, as you say, it is about how do you sort of split that down through the various levels. But on a more broader business level, we're in line with the national average. So that's something we're really proud of, and we've done a lot of work over the last sort of year or so. And we do, when we're doing compensation, that is sort of something that we do make sure that we are always looking whether these things are equal or not. And it just gives us another tool to be able to do that.
But in answer to the question, should you be reporting it? Yes, you should, because again, I think it's consciousness. I think, if it's seen in black and white, that 88%, of directors are male, it just helps, I think, in terms of just general awareness. So, in answer to the question, should you be reporting it? Very definitely, yes.
Which brings me to my last question, which I've been umming and ahhing over whether I should ask, because it's one of those... maybe I'm a bit afraid to ask it, but it raises your point, Sue, that we should talk about these things. So... unless anyone's been living under a rock, the name Harvey Weinstein will mean something to everyone. And I guess my question is, why do we pretend that this is a surprising thing? It happens, and it happens in our industry. Maybe not quite to that level, but something along those lines does. Why don't we talk about it? I think, there's certainly several women that I've talked to. I know that I can say when I was a young journalist, I let things slide that I shouldn't have let slide. How do we get over that big issue? Sorry to end on that one.
Well, again, it's the consciousness thing, isn't it? I was explaining to my children at the weekend that when I was 18... going into work, this was on a year out, I had a gap year. I worked for Lambeth Council, I didn't do anything exotic. But, an older man coming on to me, and it was really difficult, and, just dealing with it. And I think the more that people talk about those things, I mean, the Harvey Weinstein thing is just incredible, isn't it? And I think the good thing on it is that everyone is now talking about it. But I just think, I don't think you should be ashamed of asking that question or worried about asking that question at all. I think if it's an issue, I mean, is it a particular issue in the industry? I mean, I genuinely don't know. But should we be talking about... older men that come on to young girls and the impact that has on it? Yes, and I think people should talk about those things. I don't think there's any problem in doing that at all.
I think the more it kind of becomes normal and okay for you to say things. Because I think there is that, stigma of, are you saying something's amiss or was it just banter?
Yeah.
So it's trying to get that, you don't want to be the sensitive. But equally, it's not worried to let a lot of these things slide. And I still think, especially in the insurance and finance world, it's still a problem. And I think it's still a problem because women are feeling that we're trying to, we're making it and we're making real substantial progress. Do we want to look like we're taking a step back? Because we're the guys doing it, it's So I think it's something that still definitely needs to be addressed, but probably conversation is the only way forward.
So I'm really glad that you asked it, actually, because I was thinking about it on the way in this morning as you read the metro, and you think, oh my God, there's another like 20 people that have come forward. But actually what I think's been really interesting is the sort of, it was actually the hashtag Me Too, in terms of the sort of almost, you know, you don't have to tell your story, but just to say that you know something has happened, you don't have to tell what that is. And I think that's been quite an interesting sort of social media, yes, I'm going to put my hand up, say something's happened, you know, but I perhaps don't want to talk about it. And I think that's actually really positive. And yeah, I agree with everyone else. You know, the more we talk about these things, the less they'll happen and the less acceptable they become.
Andrea, thoughts?
From my experience, you know, I've seen bullying, but I don't think, obviously there's no extremes, but, you know, bullying culture is maybe something that we need to address in some, you know, through training, through education, through having a more diverse sort of diverse kind of management board, more diverse kind of workforce as well. So, you know, it's men are bullied as well. It's not just a female issue. So recognizing that, you know, there's a, you know, someone that you can go to talk, you know, as a female, use your female network then to kind of say, was that okay? What should I do about that? Should I have let that slide? Does it matter in the scheme of things? Am I going to be pinpointed if I do that? So, you know, use the mentoring and the network that, you know, we're trying to give young people to make sure that that's, you know, things that's not happening in the workplace.
Jackie, any final thoughts?
Well, I guess I think it goes back to what I was saying before about calling people out if you think they've behaved inappropriately. And if you're frightened to call out someone directly, then you should go and speak to someone else within your organisation and tell them what's happened, because, you know, there's a lot of support there now, which maybe sort of 30 years ago when I started work, you know, you would have got it, oh, don't be so silly, you know, he's just being a bloke sort of thing. Whereas now, people will get support, and if someone has behaved inappropriately, it will be dealt with.
And that, of course, goes for men as well as women, whoever you are. If anything inappropriate is happening, then do speak up. I think we could probably go on chatting forever, and that's not just because we're women, but probably a little bit. So please join me, everyone, in thanking our panel, Lucy, Andrea, Jackie, Sam and Sue, and thank you to all of you for joining us this morning.